Hello, everybody, and welcome to this wonderful show. And my name is Kisara. I am an illustrator, and I'm interviewing my brother-in-law, Preston Dennett. He is an investigator for UFOs. He's been doing it since 1986. And he discovered his family and friends and coworkers were having encounters. And it just got him so wrapped up and so interested that he began to write books. Well, I'm here to interview him on, I believe, his eighth book. Is that correct, Preston?
That's correct, my eighth UFO book.
Yes, this is the eighth UFO book that he's written, and that goes to show how committed he is to the field. And it's called UFOs Over New York, and I want to give this showtime a full attention on this book, and we're just going to talk about this book today. And I'm just curious, why write this book?
Well, as you may know, I wrote another book called UFOs Over California, which covered the history of the all UFO activity, well, not all, but your most famous, well-known UFO activity in California. And I wrote it as a history book because I think this is a very important subject that's being ignored by the mainstream media. And, well, the main reason I wrote it is because I think it's a great niche in this market, and if I don't write it, someone else definitely will. And I think it's really, really important to record the history of all these encounters because each state, I don't think people realize this, but each state has a very rich UFO history. And there's just volumes and volumes in each state. I mean, the encounters from one state alone is enough, has all the evidence you need, has every type of evidence that comes from UFOs. So,
and are New York encounters different from other states?
Oh, yeah, that's another interesting. But you know what? I think the real reason I'm writing this book is because I'm being compelled by the ETs to do it, which I know sounds strange, but honestly, I've got this compulsion to do it. I just had to do it, and I don't even know why.
Well, I know from personal experience, just being your sister-in-law and being your illustrator, there's people that come to you. And actually, you seem to connect with these people. And they tell you their stories, and it's really quite unique, I think. Instead of an investigator sitting there seeking out these people, they seem to come to you.
It's very, very bizarre. There's another person at work who was just recently employed at my work, where I work as an accountant. And he has this amazing story to tell. I haven't interviewed him formally yet. But yeah, I must have a sign on me somewhere. There's something in my aura. I don't know. It's weird. I do seek out stories, but a lot of them do come to me. It's very strange. Very strange.
Just that mere fact, I think, has some kind of I don't know what you would call it, connection to the ETs and everything.
Exactly. I mean, it reaches a point of it's beyond coincidence where there's got to be some guidance involved here. And I think the ETs are setting up a lot of what's happening to me.
Uh-huh. You know, I totally believe
writing.
That.
You know?
I know that we've had personal experiences.
Right. You know, I never saw a UFO until I started investigating, and since I started, I saw one almost, within a month that I started investigating it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've now had 20-some encounters.
Did you meet somebody from New York that's in your book?
Oh, yeah. I interviewed several people and firsthand, so it's not all just... I mean, there's stuff in here that people have never read before. And some
it's
really
very,
amazing.
Very good research. I mean, the book covers from... could you give us a time span on the book and how you have taken the reader through New York history all the way to now?
Right. That's another thing that's really fascinating, doing research for, you know, this kind of historical research, is each state, it turns out their UFO history doesn't start, like, with Roswell, you know, the modern age of UFOs in 1947. All of them go back a lot farther than that, and New York's goes back about 150 years. And there's some really incredible encounters by early astronomers and who were triangulating objects over the city, or one hovered over the World's Fair. And that was in like the 1920s, and that was seen by people. So there's a it goes way, way back. It's really, really interesting.
Yeah, because New York's an old city. It's one of the first cities, I would imagine, in the United States. And I really love all the stories that you have in here from the 1940s up. It's really quite remarkable. You even talk about, you have a section in Chapter 1 that goes way back into the 1820s. And then I read at the end of your book, you have a story from all the way to 2007. So
right.
It's really, really a wonderful book.
You asked me what was different about New York encounters as opposed to other states?
That's what I was coming back to, yes.
Right, because, you know, it's interesting. When I wrote UFOs Over California, there was a definite sort of theme there. I mean, you had a lot of encounters over military bases and a huge wave of sightings over LAX and, like, also a lot of underwater sightings. And all this stuff is kind of unique to California, right? Not totally, but it's just a theme. Well, the theme I found in New York really surprised me is that these objects are going into the very heart of the population of this of New York City. And there's a lot of encounters, more than in other states, I think, where people are seeing UFOs directly over New York City, right in downtown over Central Park. And not only UFOs are they seeing. I mean, there's one hovered over the United Nations building. There's been some encounters right next to the Empire State Building and have been photographed, actually. But what's most interesting, I think, is not just the sightings, but the fact that people are seeing ETs in the heart of the city. And I'm totally serious about this. People who are knowledgeable about the subject know you can have a UFO encounter everywhere. It's not something that's relegated to country settings, somewhere out in the wilderness. A lot of encounters do take place in very urbanized areas. And
are they encounters out on the streets? Are they in the apartments? I mean, is it everywhere in the parks and stuff?
You're not going to believe it. Here, let me just give you a couple examples because it blows your mind. One lady, she's walking down the subway. She has a history of encounters, right? She's walking down the subway, and she notices a very short figure on the subway in front of her, like in the car in front of her. She's like, wow, that person's awfully short and has no hair. But what really caught her attention, he had dark eyes, the whole thing, but what really caught her attention was the texture of the skin. She said it had a plastic look to it, which is a description I've heard many times, sort of a weird vinyl plastic look to the skin. It's different, right?
Uh-huh.
And she got a real shock and went chasing after him, and he appeared to be seeing her because he ran away, and she wasn't able to see him after that. But she's convinced.
That's so funny. That's on the subway with a bunch of other people.
Right, who didn't seem to notice it. And that's how these cases seem to go. There was another case. Here's another one. This lady is walking through downtown Manhattan to Penn Station, the very, very busy place, train terminal. And she sees, there's crowds of people walking back and forth. And in the midst of this crowd, she sees this 7-foot-tall figure towering above everyone else. And she gets a real jolt because he's not human. I mean, he doesn't look human. I know there's a lot of strange people in New York, especially, but she says, no, this was not human. He had a very, very large forehead, dark, piercing eyes. His posture was very strange. And his eyes, it was his eyes mostly because they stared right through you. And she was too scared to stop and observe because she seemed to get a mental message from him saying, go on, this is none of your business, this doesn't concern you. But this figure was scoping out all these people.
Wow. That's so fascinating.
And I've got so many others. Here's another one. This comes from the editor of Morrow Books, whose story was leaked by someone in his, one of his coworkers, and it was eventually published by Whitley Strieber, because it apparently involves the whole Strieber thing, which took place, of course, in New York.
Uh-huh.
But at any rate, the editor for Whitley Strieber's book, Communion, walks into the bookstore to check out the book. And this is, again, in the heart of the city. It's a crowded bookstore. Lots of people are there. And he's looking for the section which holds the book, and he finally finds it. You know, it's in the kind of the back of the store, not terribly easy to find. And he checks it out and was getting ready to go when suddenly he notices this odd-looking couple walk into the store. And the first thing odd about them was they were dressed completely bundled up so that you couldn't see any of their skin. They had gloves on. They had scarves on, hats, and very big, oversized sunglasses. So you could not see them, right?
Yeah.
And they were kind of short and slender. And what was also odd was the way they behaved. They did not walk in like a normal customer. They walked in and walked straight to the communion section, as if they knew where it was, which he found very odd. And so he crept forward to see what they thought of the book. And this is when he got a real shock. They picked up the book and sped read it, the entire book, and were editing it out loud, saying, oh, he got this right, he got this right, this wasn't quite right. And he became very intrigued. He's like, who are these people? And so he walked up and approached them. And that's when they turned around and looked at him, and one of them pulled down the sunglasses and stared at him. He says he got the biggest shock of his life because the eyes that were looking at him were not human. They were very large, oversized almond eyes, dark, pupilless, you know, the kind you see on gray-type ETs.
Uh-huh.
And he got a telepathic message, get out of here. Basically, he said it was like a mad dog staring him down. He felt so uncomfortable, he had to leave.
Wow.
And he's totally convinced that that was, in fact, an ET. And there's so many cases like this, Chris. Another lady, and there's so many. People seeing them in apartment buildings. Timothy Good, he's a UFO researcher. He saw an ET at a hotel,
uh-huh.
A human-looking ET. So pretty interesting. Pretty darn
I know that there was a case in your book that mentioned that there were a lot of witnesses to one sighting, and that was fascinating to me. That you know, it's undeniable that New York has had experiences because of this one event where there were so many people that saw the ship, and.
Right.
And you had mentioned that it was a shame that it was covered up so thoroughly for so long that it was forgotten. But it was a very extraordinary event. I'm trying to find it in the book, but I was reading it, and it was amazing.
I'm not sure which one you're talking about.
We do have a caller.
Oh, we have a caller.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
All right.
Preston, it's Gary White.
Gary, how you doing?
Not bad. How you doing, Preston?
I'm doing very well. It's great to hear from you. How are things out there in Nevada?
Good, good, good. Things are good. Not bad, not bad. Got some nice weather. Kind of cooled off a little bit. We got a lot of smoke from the fires in California, though.
Oh, really?
Kind of cloud and stuff, Preston. But, yeah, I was listening to your show. Another person, John Lennon. From his apartment in New York. Him and Yoko Ono seen and had a UFO experience.
That's right.
Right in New York City. Yes.
Yep, I think that was in the 1970s, and they saw a typical metallic-shaped UFO, but it had a bunch of lights on it, and it went right next to their apartment and scooted around it a couple of times, actually. Went back and forth, I mean. And
Exactly.
They watched it for quite a while and called the police, and the police are like, oh, yeah, we've received a bunch of calls about it.
Exactly. And we are right in the middle of New York City, in the middle of everything.
Yeah, I'm convinced that these UFOs are doing this on purpose. I think they want to be seen. I think they're putting on displays because there are so many encounters like that.
Yeah,
I know that you have.
And I mean,
go ahead.
My experience, obviously, a different story from this. And I've been in a situation where I could see them, and there's other people around me that don't see them. So they seem to be able to shut off the various people in the same area. They kind of pick and choose whom they're going to allow to see them.
Yeah, that just goes to show how advanced their technology is.
Yes.
I don't know exactly why they're doing that, though. I mean, why let some people see them and others not? It's frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, I got a friend that really wants to see them bad, and he keeps saying, well, you've seen them, you know, you've seen them several times, and why can't I see them? And it's like, well, I wish I could answer that for you, you know? hopefully someday, Preston, it will become a public thing, you know? That would be kind of neat to see.
Yeah, well, I'm right there with you, Gary. That's why I'm doing this sort of research.
Exactly. Well, right on, Preston, I just wanted to call, say hello, make the John Lennon comment, and definitely would like to check out your new book. Definitely like the way you write, Preston. And just thought I would pop in really quick and say hi to you. And just wanted to throw in, me being a musician, wanted to throw in the musician side of that with John Lennon in New York. But I guess I will let you back to your show, and you please take care of yourself, Preston, and I will be in touch with you.
Awesome. Well, thanks for calling, Gary. It's great to hear from you, and I'll talk to you soon.
Okay, Preston. You take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Gary White. I interviewed him. He has had a number of really close encounters all his life.
It's interesting because he picked up on your book. You have a whole section on celebrity encounters.
You know, I absolutely have a surprise how many celebrities have seen UFOs. And, you know, we've got a celebrity-based culture, practically. I mean, everything's all about fame and celebrities. It's front-page news when Jennifer Aniston or Britney Spears, you know, stubs their toe. So, people...
And he mentioned John Lennon. You have you wrote
right.
about John Lennon seeing
right.
a UFO.
Exactly. For whatever reason, people are really interested in celebrities, and I think that if people realize how many celebrities are actually seeing this stuff too, they would be shocked, because it's not only John Lennon. Neil Sedaka had a really interesting sighting of a basic, just kind of distant sighting of an anomalous object darting across the sky. And not only him, there's several other celebrities. Muhammad Ali has been a big proponent of UFOs and has seen them several times in New York and in other places.
Uh-huh.
But you know who I think is the most interesting sighting of all the celebrities? Would have to be Jimi Hendrix.
Oh.
You know, Mel Torme, he saw a UFO. Punk rocker Helen Wheels, she's won platinum records. A lot of
uh-huh.
people, a lot of famous people. But Jimi Hendrix, who, of course, is a really, really famous musician, was driving through New York in 1965. And this was in upstate New York. It was a heavy winter. And he and his band became snowed in a giant snowdrift. And Curtis Knight was driving, and Jimi Hendrix was in the passenger seat when they became snowed in and the car couldn't move. And they tried to turn on the heater, but things were looking really bad. It looked like they were going to be snowed in there for the night, which is really dangerous. People die this way. And that's when suddenly this very bright glow appears in front of the car, and it's this really tall figure, like 8 feet tall, and looks kind of robotic, and it glides towards their van and sort of it moves around it. And as it does, all the snow melts. And Curtis Knight is and Jimi Hendrix are watching this. When it goes up to Jimi Hendrix's side and starts to communicate, apparently, telepathically with it. And as this is going on, the van suddenly gets really hot inside. You know, all the snow is gone, and the figure finally departs, goes back into this object that they now see landed in front of the road. And the object, Curtis Knight is sure, he called it a strange craft. And he said it lifted off like a rocket and disappeared. And he asked Jimmy about it because they had had other sightings. Jimi Hendrix kind of had a big UFO connection. He wrote about it in a lot of his songs. And Jimmy kind of made it apparent that it was not cool to talk about and that it was sort of their little secret. So it's really interesting. He never did give any interviews about it, neither did John Lennon, who saw it with his girlfriend May Pang. But a lot of celebrities.
That's so fascinating.
Yeah,
I didn't even know Jimi Hendrix was a contactee.
Yeah, and oh, his songs totally reflected. His songs talk about, you know, what do you call it? Earth changes and like nuclear stuff and things like that, about healings, about a golden winged ship is passing my way. That was a line in one of his songs.
Oh, yeah. Now that I think about it. Wow.
So he was basically doing what a lot of musicians are doing, channeling, I think, ETs. I mean, Gary White, who just called, he's actually a musician, too. And he's mentioned similar feelings, you know, that of telepathic contact. And I think it shows a really positive side to the whole UFO phenomenon, because you hear a lot about abductions. And here's a case, certainly seems legitimate. And this ET came in to basically save their lives, save them from being snowed in and frozen to death.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. Speaking of abductions, does New York have quite a bit of abductions over there? I'd imagine they would.
Yeah, you know what? What's interesting, and New York is really important to the whole study of UFO abduction phenomenon because it really got a lot of its start in there. Of course, the first case was the Betty and Barney Hill case, the first publicized case in the United States. And that was not a New York